Hi, Glenn.
Hi, baby. How are we doing?
I'm good. What are we talking about today?
I was hoping that you could help me get on tape the basics of how I use surveys to break up a market and assess the risk throughout the market so that I know what my likelihood of success is as I either roll out a new product or expand business in a new way.
So can I ask you a totally silly question?
You just did.
Are we on tape?
Oh, yeah. No, we're recording right now.
But we're not tape anymore, are we?
Well, I'm recording on the computer.
It's just amazing to me how technology changes all the time and that what you're offering to people is a new paradigm. And just like we used to use tape, now we go right to the computer. It just amazes me.
That was very slick. Didn't see that coming. Just like you might think that a very simple survey of your market in general is a terrific way to assess your market before you go to market or before you roll out a new portion of your business or try to optimize a part of your business. The truth is that, while it's terrific to do that, and most marketers don't even do that kind of research, there are dramatically new and different ways to assess your market.
And to think about the research itself.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
So teach me. Well, I'm the qualitative person. You're the quant.
Well, you know what? I don't know if everybody listening to this is going to know very much about my background and your background. Could you help me say that in just a few sentences without being boring?
I don't know. I don't know. I can try. I think we both have our loves of research, and it comes from different aspects. I do what's called qualitative research, as you know, and qualitative research is mostly talking to people on an open-ended basis and inviting them to kind of spill their guts, and you want their brains and their hearts and their guts. You want the whole nine yards, and you do it with mostly open-ended questions. And then we go back and interpret and try to figure out what all that means.
You've actually done this for over 50 of the Fortune 500, haven't you?
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And quantitative is a more structured approach where you really get at the skeleton of what the issues are. And you can do, they call it quantitative because what you do then is you collect a lot of information in a way that's standardized so that you can analyze it.
Right. The quantitative is the bones and the qualitative is the flesh
meat,
and the heart.
And the heart.
Soul. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But if you have flesh and heart and soul without the bones, then you've got to...
It can't stand up.
It can't stand up. Yeah. And if you have the bones, then you don't really have the...
It's not very warm and
essence.
Fuzzy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Two other things I want people to know about us are that we were both psychologists first and foremost. I actually grew up in a family of psychologists, of mom and dad and uncle
17 and other people.
It's just ridiculous when you're at a family reunion. It's just a situation comedy. But the reason that's important is that when we wound up entering the field of marketing research, we did it from a perspective of being deeply attuned to people. So even when we're talking about quantitative research, what I'm really looking for is a deep attunement. And of course, I'm trying to abstract that and put numbers on it and look at the size of opportunities and the size of pitfalls and figure out how to leverage that. But I still think of myself first and foremost as a psychologist. And the short story is 9/11 came along and it kind of uprooted both of our lives. And I wound up taking a sabbatical from my practice and a sabbatical from all the consulting work I was doing in corporations, because I used to consult for the same clients as Sharon would. And I kind of freaked out and moved to New Hampshire. Made my wife move to New Hampshire with me, and I decided I wanted to be an internet marketer. And you can read the rest of my story online if you want to. So maybe we could talk more specifically about the opportunity to use surveys today.
Great.
To reduce risk.
Why do we do surveys? Why do we do marketing research in a particular marketplace?
Well, I think that there are four main reasons to do research in a marketplace, any kind of research.
Okay.
One is to figure out what the downside risk is. Is it possible that you're going to lose money, and how much money are you going to lose? I had one experience, along with my darling wife, of losing $2 million and we didn't have $2 million.
Well, I mean, we invested everything we had and then we borrowed to keep it afloat.
It was just amazing to me that banks would let you lose that much money when you
amazing.
Just... Yeah. But that was because we thought that we really understood the market and we did no research and then we also were made very unlucky by 9/11, but...
Right. I think we would have survived it had it not been for 9/11, but on our intuition.
Right.
But had we done the research ahead of time, I think we might have made a different decision.
The impact of that on me was I became very, very risk averse. You know, I was really enamored with internet marketing and...
He only ate hamburgers for like 6 months one time.
I don't understand.
You were very risk averse. You wouldn't even do it in your foods.
You're very silly. Along with the idea of doing research to find out whether you should enter a marketplace is, you know, thinking about how much money you could make. But I think most importantly is that what people usually think of as a market is really usually not a unitary market. And especially as the cost of distribution are going down, especially on the internet, it's becoming more and more possible, almost necessary, to cater to the micro markets within a market. And sometimes the sub-segments within those sub-segments say that three times fast. So what I really like to do when I am implementing a survey is to figure out among all of those segments and sub-segments and niches, really, micro-niches within the market, what's the group of micro-niches that's going to be more responsive? And so I actually use the survey as an instrument to
get as granular as you can.
Yeah, but to test it first.
Mm-hmm.
To test it first.
And the itch to test?
Test the responsiveness of the market.
Gotcha.
You want to talk about why?
Sure.
Well, let's say you wanted to set up a new store. Let's do this offline to start with.
Okay.
Well, what do most people do? They kind of scope out what they think is a good location. Maybe they'll take a look to see if there's enough traffic going by there. But they've decided what kind of a store they want to put up, and they've decided what's going to be in the store. And they fill the store with the location, and they cross their fingers and
pray
and say a prayer and hope and hope and hope. I'd like to propose a different paradigm. What if instead of filling up the store first and just counting the traffic that walks by, well, what if you could see if it's going to be possible to actually get people into the store? And once they're in the store, if you could run a survey by them. Instead of filling up the store, just meet them with a pleasant interviewer who's got a few questions to find out exactly what they were hoping was going to be in the store.
So before you populate the store.
Yeah. I would even say before you sign a long-term lease, I would try to rent a store for a couple of weeks and get this done.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this is not practical offline, but for the sake of analogy, I'm going to stick with it.
Okay.
So you've got this store, and you've put up some signs, and look, if you can't get people to come into the store, even if there are thousands of people on that block, if you can't figure out a sign to put up on that store that's going to get people to come into the store, don't bother renting that store.
Right.
Because it could be that most of the needs of the people passing that store on that block are predominantly taken care of by the other stores.
Right. It might be there's a store around the corner you didn't notice.
It really could be. Yeah. Or maybe you just don't have the right connection with them. You don't really understand how to get their attention at all. Whatever it is, you need some measure of whether you're going to be able to get their attention in the first place. Then, if you are getting their attention, you want to know what their expectations are based upon their attention. And it might seem a kind of a cruel trick to say, you know, put up a store that says something like Johnny's Ice Cream Shop, all you can eat ice cream for 5 cents or something like that, and then have people walk in and there's nothing in the store besides an interviewer. But here's the point. If that person comes in and sees the interview and says, ah, screw you, I don't want to bother with the survey, a lot of the market's going to do that no matter what. But in my experience, if less than 5% of the people bother to take a survey, well, there's probably not a strong need for ice cream on that block.
You're going to have to work much harder to sell.
Yeah. So the first thing you want to see is,
how motivated are they to take the survey?
How motivated are they to take the survey? And in my experimentation, I actually find that the percent of people who are willing to take the survey corresponds directly to the percent of people who later on, when I'm willing to put up my store or online...
To populate it.
Yeah, online when I'm willing to set up a newsletter or an actual store with content in it, it corresponds directly to the number of people that will sign up for a newsletter, and it corresponds directly to the number of people that will buy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
So if I know that X percent of the people took the survey, then I also know that twice as many people are going to be willing to sign up for a newsletter in general, and I can usually get Y percent of those people to buy something. And what that allows me to do is, for any store that I choose to survey, I can almost calculate what my cost of acquisition is going to be. Almost calculate how much it's going to cost me to make a sale and how much it's going to cost me to generate a lead. All I need to do then is kind of look in that market and see what similar stores are selling and what their margins are. And I can tell whether or not that particular pathway is going to be viable.
Interesting. I'm nodding away. People can't see me nodding, but that's so interesting.
I can see you nodding.
Good.
Did you have a question?
No, it was just really interesting what you were saying.
But let's take it a couple steps further.
Okay.
Obviously, if I'm going to go into a new market, I'm going to scope out a lot of stores on a lot of different blocks, and I'm going to try to figure out what their level of responsiveness is going to be and what my cost of acquisition might be in each of those stores.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm doing this online, then my blocks would correspond to keyword themes, like groups of keywords that people are searching on. There might be one group about, let's say I was opening up a guinea pig store. There might be one group about guinea pig health. There might be one group about guinea pig care, another group about guinea pig cages, another group about guinea pig longevity, another group about how they are with kids. And I'm going to set up a store in each one of those blocks. And for each one of the individual keywords, I'm going to set up a separate store with a separate surveyor. And so I define my market as this whole set of keywords.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get a measure of how responsive each one of the keywords are going to be. Does that make sense so far?
Yes.
But what you can also do is you can really look at the quality of the survey itself. So it's more than will they take it or not, because there are some people that will take the survey and just say, yeah, so I'll take your stupid survey. And they don't really engage. They give you one or two word answers. They're just kind of bored with the whole process and they're just doing it. I guess the part that I forgot to mention is that while I never incent people with money,
mm-hmm.
I usually incent them with something related to the theme of the store that they're in.
Like you'll give them information or...
Yeah, so if it was a store all about guinea pig healthcare, then I might connect with a veterinarian and get them to give me a discount coupon or something. Or if it was a store generally about guinea pigs, then I would promise to give them a book when I was done. And the book is usually
right.
just the answers to all their questions when
right.
we put them together.
So that'd be like an e-book or something.
Yeah. Or it could be a regular book also.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the stores in these blocks don't have to be online stores with keyword themes and separate keywords. They can also be direct mailing lists. They can be television commercials. They can be telemarketing efforts with particular lists. Really, a store is a list and a block is a group of related lists. Does that make sense?
Say that again. A store is a list.
What I'm trying to get across is that it's really easy to see how to do this online. And I tend to do my research online because it's faster and cheaper. And I think that when people are proactively searching for something, their mindset and the conversation going on in their head is so much different than when...
They're not in the heat of the moment.
When they're not in the heat of the moment. So I really want to interview them in the heat of the moment. And the only place you can actively do that is either in a store or online when they're searching for something.
I think that's so fabulous. I think that's a major innovation in market research.
Because they don't do that in market research, right?
Because it's impossible. It can't be done unless you are in store. And even then, what you're identifying that I think is so incredible is the people who are in need and not getting the need met.
Right.
And those are, I think, the hottest prospects, no?
Right.
And that, to me, is a major innovation in marketing research, that you're able to get someone who really wants something, who hasn't had their needs met, and they want it so badly that they're really willing to fill out the survey to tell you what they need because they're really needing help. And they're your hottest prospects, I would imagine.
It's really a behavioral test.
What do you mean?
It's trying to get them to do something as close as you can to getting them to seeing how much frustration and energy they're willing to put out to solve a problem, how much frustration they'll endure and how much energy they're willing to put out to solve a problem. It's as close as you can get to doing a market test where you're asking people to pay for something before you really know what the market wants.
Right.
It's just shocking to me that like when you've been telling me and I've observed, but none of your clients are really doing this, it really...
And you've got all the bucks.
And they've, I mean, these people are spending millions of dollars, literally, millions a year on research,
right.
Literally. And they don't really know about this, as far as I can tell. Maybe they do somewhere.
They do some little stuff, but they don't do the fancy stuff that you do.
It just really illustrates the opportunity that is available in the market.
Even more so.
And even in markets that you think are exceptionally competitive and all sewn up, people have just not looked at the long tail. They've just not examined the niches and micro niches. And
you know what it reminds me of? Like you've said to me, someone will see someone on the internet doing something and they make the assumption that that person, you know, maybe they're high up on an AdSense or something, and they make the assumption that they've done their homework, and so they copy it.
Right.
And it's not necessarily so. And it reminds me of when I was in college and I was single and I was learning things in psychology of behavior, and I would go into Manhattan and do things like starting a line, like just a queue, to see if I can get people to stand behind me. And I would just be someplace in front of something and I would start a line. And people would line up behind me. It was the weirdest thing. They would line up behind me. I would do it with a friend because I was too scared to do it all by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend Beverly and I would go and start lines. And people would line up.
What you're saying is very funny, but it also illustrates like a fundamental aspect of human nature, which is that we basically have a herd mentality that even applies to marketers. And
yeah.
This was very important to me because even though we had all these years of, I mean, we've done million-dollar projects. You'd think that we're all highfalutin and
know
confident.
What we're talking about, right.
But we had just come off of losing $2 million.
Because we didn't do our homework.
We had a ridiculous amount of debt, and we couldn't pay our bills for 9 months. And when I started to look at these markets, I was scared. And I would see a market that looked relatively competitive. And now I look at that, and I think, well, but they're all basically committing marketing incest. They're all kind of doing what everybody else is doing.
Where are the holes?
And it's human nature to assume, well, that's what you're supposed to do, and there's not really an opportunity because everybody's doing that.
Right.
There's a phenomenon called diffusion of responsibility. You know, in 1969, I think it was, do you remember Kitty Genovese?
Yes.
So Kitty Genovese was this woman that was murdered, screaming bloody murder, in an apartment building in New York City. And it later came to pass that 34 or 35 people had heard her screaming, and nobody called the police.
Unbelievable.
And you know why?
They thought somebody else was going to do it.
Everybody thought that somebody else must have done it. And you know,
and they didn't want to get involved.
Yeah. There's actually a whole series of studies after that to figure out why nobody did it.
What happened, right.
And people were saying all kinds of horrible things about human nature. And I think we basically do want to help one another. But there was a cost to getting involved, and everybody really assumed that someone else must have done it.
Right.
And so when you look at a market and you see 40 different companies lined up to market something to your prospect, and you think that you see a need that they don't see, you probably do. Because they're probably all assuming that somebody else has gotten to
done it.
Yeah.
I think that's very
relevant.
And
so it's kind of like taking the blue pill in the Matrix for me, or maybe it was the red pill. The one that opens your eyes.
Right.
The whole world just opened up to me.
Uh-huh.
I would look at a market and I'd say, first of all, there's some people making money in spite of themselves, leaving these opportunities. And
right.
And there are all these gaps and needs in the market that are just not taken care of. And every market, even the most competitive markets, are under-optimized. As the cost of distribution are going down and as technology is increasing, there are just so many opportunities to cater to people's individual needs. And the key is figuring out how to find out what those micro-needs are.
Right.
So I went off on a tangent. We were talking about how you use the survey with each of the, we're extending the survey analogy to multiple stores and multiple blocks. And I was explaining that those represented different groups of lists, which could be keyword lists, which could be mail lists, which could be phone lists, could be any media whatsoever.
So how do you decide whether or not you should enter the market in the first place?
Whether you should survey the market or whether you should enter the market?
Okay, both. That's a good question. I'm glad you rephrased it.
It'll probably make more sense if I finish talking about the different ways that the survey can tell you how responsive each part of the market's going to be and what you can do with that.
Okay.
Then after that, if you still want to know how I decide which markets are worth surveying, then I'll be happy to tell you. It's really actually a lot less complicated and a lot easier to find potential markets than most people think.
Really?
It really is. So I'll save that for the end.
Okay.
So we were talking about setting up the multiple stores and multiple blocks and really putting our researchers out across a, casting a wide net, and then seeing how responsive each of the stores are on a percentage basis. But mm-hmm. what I also will look for is how engaged they are with the interviewer.
Mm-hmm.
So I might ask them, what's your most important question about guinea pig health, if that's what they were searching on?
Mm-hmm.
Or if it was just a general guinea pig survey, I would ask them, what's your most important question about guinea pigs? By the way, a really cool thing about that is that when people give you an answer and they might say, I want to know how long guinea pigs live, well, you start to know exactly what you need to speak to them about when you're selling to them.
Right.
But if you ask them why they were searching for it,
mm-hmm.
and so in this example, if a woman says, well, I bought a hamster for little Bobby, you know, last year, and the poor thing only lived 7 months, and Bobby was devastated, and I just don't want to go through that again,
mm-hmm.
you've got a dramatically better defined advertising platform that you can sell to this woman with, knowing why she was searching in addition to what she was searching for.
Because you could reassure her guinea pigs live 10 times as long or 5 times as long, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, and they do, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I also, I forget whether we talked about this in another audio, so that we'll try to be brief about it, but even when people are engaged about a behavior, they could be engaged because they're just enthusiastic about the topic. They would engage with their mother-in-law about it.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's willing to listen to them talk about guinea pigs, they'd be willing. Uh-huh. You need to know whether they'll engage in something, but that's necessary but not sufficient for purchase. You need to know, is this information that they're really having a hard time finding so that they would pay for?
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between a price of entry benefit, which is information they expect to find for free, or information they might know a little bit about already, but they are just trying to flesh it out, versus something that's really hard for them to find that they'd be exceptionally grateful if you gave them the answer to.
So is this just for information, or is it also for products?
Well, no, this would be especially for products. If I was selling a Ferrari,
mm-hmm.
it might be that everybody knows what the standard acceleration and wheelbase is of the newest model, but what's hard for them to find is exactly when the next model is coming out and what are the safety tests on it. With whatever you're selling, you're going to have what's going to be elicited from these open-ended questions. What's your most important question about a Ferrari,
mm-hmm.
and why are you searching for a Ferrari? There's going to be a list of desired features, and you want to know how important each of those desired features are and where are the market gaps in terms of people telling a story about those features.
These are things that you ask in order to start thinking about the kind of messaging that you want to...
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, because if someone comes in and says, I'm looking to find out when the next model Ferrari comes out and whether it's going to get more than a 9.0 in the consumer guide testing for safety, well, then your sales letter can say, find out when the next model Ferrari comes out before anybody else does and see whether it beat the critical 9.0 testing level.
Uh-huh.
You really just spit it back to them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another element of human nature, by the way. It starts with children. Children just love to be mirrored. It's part of how people know who they are. When they have another human being feed back to them their words and their emotions and their imagery, they're immediately bonded to that other person because you've shored up their sense of self. And that's why that works so well in a sales environment.
I love it. That's great. So we're doing the research to determine what the wants and needs are in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And to discover the language people use so you can mirror them.
Mm-hmm.
And then how else do we find the right message besides the wants and needs in the language?
Well, you ask people if they're willing to give you their phone number.
Mm-hmm.
Ask people if they're willing to give you their phone number as part of the survey. And that's going to give you two opportunities. First of all, you want to look very carefully at the questions and concerns of people who gave you their phone number, because those questions and concerns are representative of people that want more of a relationship with you.
Mm-hmm.
And people that want more of a relationship with you are usually willing to spend more money.
Got it.
And so you not only want to look at them like in a quantitative, structural way in your survey, but you also want to call these people and talk to them. And that kind of gets into the whole qualitative research audio that you and I did together.
Where we talk about mood and tone and...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, in some of the sequences where people will be listening to this. That will be before, and some of them will be afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be a link on this page where this audio is to that interview if people want to listen to that.
Very cool.
Yeah. So there's just one or two other things I wanted to say about the survey, and then I think we could wind down.
Oh, sure.
I mean, unless you have more questions.
I'm doing great.
I'm not sure if I made it clear that you need to ask people how difficult the information has been defined so you can figure out the point of difference versus price of entry benefits. And I also get an awful lot out of asking people, how could I really knock their socks off?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've had several dozen students come back to me and say, people in my market are annoyed by those kinds of questions. Well, okay, people are annoyed by going to the doctor to be diagnosed and kind of examined. And the fact that they're annoyed when they get asked the question doesn't mean that you won't get valuable information from it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if only a small percentage of people will answer that, you know, I find that it's well worth the cost of annoying a few people with that question to get the market to brainstorm for you, because the collective wisdom of the market is so much more valuable than anything you'll ever come up with by yourself.
Right, because we can get so tied up in thinking that what we're selling is so terrific that we don't realize that we think it's terrific, but it may or may not be terrific to our customers.
It's really easy to get myopic.
I mean, I just had that happen recently. We were doing a naming project for a financial service, and I came up with a name that I thought was really dynamite. And we took it to consumers, and they hated it. Totally, totally hated it. And I thought it was brilliant. And so it's so easy for that to happen.
Exactly. I remember that name also, and I loved it also when you came up with it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be humble.
Yeah. So that's basically what I wanted to get across. I'll ask demographics on a survey. If there are issues in that market that I'm aware of beforehand, I'll ask them so I can examine them also. What I really wanted to get across was that if you break up your list appropriately and you ask people some core sets of questions, that you can come up with indications of responsivity, and then you can kill the pathways that look like they're not going to be profitable right away. And it makes it possible to go into markets that nobody else can get into because they don't bother to break it up like this and do this type of pretesting.
So is there anything else that you think people should know before we leave this idea of research on the net?
Do you still want to know about how you pick a market to survey?
Yeah.
My customers tend to be people who are already established in a business and, you know, are looking to double it or triple it or expand it in some way they haven't done before.
Okay.
I get that question less often, so I put you off about it a little bit. But
okay.
What you want to know before you go into a market are, is there enough volume to make it worthwhile for your time and effort? And especially for this method works better in high volume markets because you're breaking things down into subgroups, and surveys rely on the law of large numbers to achieve statistical reliability and reduce
mm-hmm.
the margin of error.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're breaking things down into smaller groups, you want those smaller groups to have large enough numbers
so you can read them.
Yeah. So the small group findings will be stable also. So you need to have enough volume in the market, and you can get an estimation of that at some of the standard keyword research tools like wordtracker.com, or there's a free one at inventory.overture.com.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have an indication that people are actually paying money in the market. And I used to worry, and I would suggest that if people are new at this, that they go into a low-cost market to start with, you know, something where they can buy clicks for 5 or 10 cents and only spend a few $100 to do this kind of test.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not expect to make more than a few $1,000s a month off of that.
To get their feet wet.
To get their feet wet and kind of learn the process and, you know, get some money coming in the door with this. The real power, though, is when you really understand how to do this, if there's a high volume market and people are spending a lot of money, then what you can usually do is you can almost get away without having to put up a product of your own at all. Because if people are already making a lot of money, there's a lot of products and a lot of people to make deals with that you can sell their products for them.
Uh-huh.
And you can go out there and research the market and understand it better than anybody else does. And then you just make connections for people. Instead of advertising a product, you advertise a newsletter, or you make a set of audios, kind of like we're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And people get very, very bonded to you because they feel totally understood and like you're providing information that other people are not providing for them. And when you're a trusted authority like that, assuming you don't violate their trust, they will buy on your recommendation.
Cool.
And when you add that kind of intelligence to a market, I think it's actually some of the easiest money that's out there nowadays.
That's really terrific. Do we leave anything out on this topic?
Well, the way you can find the amount of money being spent on the market is looking at the bid price at Overture.
Uh-huh.
Look at the fourth or the fifth bid instead of the first bid. There's a lot more in the course all about how to do that and a lot more of the metrics that we use and specific techniques and whatnot. No, I don't think I left out anything very substantial. I don't think I left out anything substantial in the way that I use surveys to evaluate the market.
Well, another interesting little session with you, my dear.
Well, thank you, my dear. Thanks very much for your time and attention. If you'd like to find out more about the comprehensive marketing research system I've used to succeed in market after market, please visit howtodoubleyourbusiness.com. That's howtodoubleyourbusiness.com.